cross section of one of the old trees that's been cut down.
Here I was born. And there I died. It was only a moment for you. You took no notice.
I think I've seen this movie before. When I was a kid, I saw it on TV.
Don't talk.
I did see it before.
Don't. Please.
Have you been here before?
Yes.
When?
But I don't...
When were you born?
I don't recognize this.
Long ago.
Where?
What's the matter?
Tell me. Madeline, tell me.
No.
Madeline, tell
it's
me.
Just like what's happening with us.
No, I can't tell you.
Like the past. The movie never changes. It can't change. But every time you see it, it seems different because you are different. You see different things.
If you can't change anything because it's already happened, you may as well smell the flowers.
What flowers?
Somewhere in the light.
It's an expression.
This is John McGuire, and you are listening to Always Record number 105.
Yo, if you had much class, a style like I had, you would be so glad. I see why you so mad. I'm born with it, like Marvin and Lorne with it.
Yo, the born with it, the way we perform with it. You gon' get it. Your rebuttals along with it. The song ended if you satisfied.
It's all splendid. Yeah, like Kevin Lockery, rocking some beige wallabies, blinded by the mockery.
Time is never stopping me. Drop the clue, connected with cutting new on the
1-2.
There's only one capable breaks the unbreakable melodies, unmakeable patterns, unescapable, whatever we aim at. We line them up, the party is weak from the same rap, time's up. We paying homage as well as returning favors. Candy for your ears, hear us now, or hear us later.
We will be capable, make no mistake if we break a few rules, make a few moves, and drop a few jewels on top of your views. Unstoppable dudes, using third optical tools to rock a few crews. You got it confused, melodically, use rap to sonically bruise cats. Harmonies move over chemically glued tracks to rip up.
Formulated facts, center, orchestrated back, bend the sign, post dates, and you take you out like placenta. When I'm in your eye, engine. Blend with the beat like shadows and black ninjas.
Meet the epicenter when I'm rocking the mic. I'm from the earthquake stakes, shaking up your life. No aftershock, we blow the spot from the top. We have to rock, ain't that much time on the clock. Kick rocks, keep it moving now, pick up the pace. We drop and hit the ground running, winning the race. With limited space and limited tapes at any rate. We take your mind to the realest estates.
Cause the boat gon' shine, we'll blow your mind. We'll both go rhyme, and music from a DJ in the back gon' shine. We'll blow your mind, we'll both go. My DJ in the back is gonna break. Yo, we're paying homage as well as returning favors. Candy for your ear, hear us now.
Yo, I put the bob in a bob diddy. Spit it for y'all city, use what the law give me. Flip it if y'all with me, kinda black, kinda bold. Ghetto so beautiful, stealing it for you to hold. Cover girl, centerfold. My spot, hot like lava rock. I get busy from Panorama City to Long Park. You prefer hood, medic procedure, poetical breather with fever.
Cause the flow gon' shine, we'll blow your mind. We'll both go rhyme, and music from my DJ in the back gon' shine. We'll blow your mind, we'll both go rhyme. My DJ in the back is gonna break, break, break. Gonna break, 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 break. There's only one capable breaks the unbreakable melodies, unmakeable patterns, unescapable, whatever we aim at. We'll line them up, the party is weak from the same rap, time's up. We're paying homage as well as returning favors. Candy for your ear, hear us now, or hear us later.
For those listeners who didn't feel that, we just had another one, baby.
The sights looking fucking awesome right now, so...
Yeah, I'm very impressed by how... I just like the new grid system. It's so much more accessible and less cumbersome. I don't know. There's just like, yeah, it's a good feel to it. So that whole brainstorming and getting that bringing that into reality was important and a great move, and obviously required a lot of work and attention to detail. But yeah, it looks fucking sick. I'm impressed with everything, and I'm just trying to get some stuff to put up on the site and keep fleshing it out, because like there's so much that it really is. When you see it all, when you scroll down like Always Record or the 42 minutes, it's just obscene how much stuff is there.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like this way, doing it as these thumbnails, now you really get a sense of how much is
right
there.
And you also can like kind of, I don't know, if you're into looking at mandalas and stuff, you can kind of see where people are coincide, and I don't know, it's like easier to play with the numbers and the dates and all that stuff if you're into playing games with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, now I feel like I can go back further. Like, I have a habit when I go to the site, I like every time we put up a new episode, I do this, is I scroll down to see how the new image plays with the images before it. Mm-hmm. I have this really weird habit. Every time a new episode comes out, and as soon as it's on the site, I scroll down at least 20 episodes.
I do the same thing, and they're not even my artwork. That's so funny. Go on.
So now I feel like it's kind of lost that, and at the same time, instead, I'm able to, just by my scrolling back, say, quote-unquote, 20 episodes, now I'm scrolling back 100 episodes, mm-hmm. basically, you know?
Yeah.
So, and it's not like the artwork is gone. It's just sort of like you're taking in more and therefore less detail.
It's a mosaic.
But a wider scope, yeah.
It's become a mosaic instead of just this linear tower that is like kind of cumbersome to go all the way down, and you can't, everything looks isolated when you're scrolling through it. This way there's like a connectivity to it. So it's definitely in the spirit of synchronizing and connecting and all that stuff.
Yeah. So again, I admit I am kind of sad to lose the like big detail. And at the same time, I think it's well worth losing that,
yes.
to have this.
Oh yeah. 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 Something lost, something gained. It's nice. So
there's one last thing on the website before we change gears. Did you see if you click on the radio tab? So now he's got this thing where every time there's a new episode, it automatically updates.
Yes.
And that I really fucking like. Because now you can get a fucking scope of it's just fucking amazing. Like, to be able to see, you know, and the great thing is, like, it helps this whole network, right? Like, if, let's say you're a fan of Always Record, but then you click this and you're like, oh shit, I didn't know Marty Weeds interviewed Randall Carlson. Cool. You know, it sort of like sticks that there, so you get a glimpse.
Right.
Of what's new. And it's also, what I didn't like previously is, let's say you were someone who listened to all the shows, but not everyone's producing on a weekly basis. You might forget that Synchronize put out a new episode, or Pentimental, whatever. So you'd have to click on each show to see, is there a new episode? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if you go to this landing spot, you could just see, oh, okay, there isn't a Pentimental this week.
Yeah.
But, oh shit, there is a new 42 minutes, there's a new Sync Quick, blah, 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 blah,
yeah.
blah. Right? So I really like that. I think this is like, you know, anytime I could have an idea as to, you know, I wanted something where we had a kind of updating thing like this, and then Guillaume turns around and impresses the shit out of me by making it something way cooler than I could have thought of. So,
right. And it's all there. It's nothing you have to search for. After you hit radio, you see everything there. It's just, you don't have to do any scrolling, even if you don't want to. If you want the complete pictures on the bottom, you do, but otherwise it's all good. It's really evolving quickly, in essence.
Exactly. You know,
it feels like it's happened in a blink of an eye. Like, I guess I've been pretty distracted the last month, so maybe I haven't noticed, but it's just like, yeah, it's nuts. Time is definitely accelerating. I think there's something to add.
Yeah. And I'm just really happy to get the view of someone that doesn't have a pair of eyes that has been staring at it for the last few weeks like I have. So,
no, it's made the experience just like, as a stalker of the internet and someone that's gone through enough websites to know what, I guess, facilitates the flow of someone through a website and whatnot. There's something to that. It's actually there's kind of an art to it. And so there's more nuance to kind of web design and stuff that I think you guys are putting into play that's really cool. And even compare this to others, it's not cluttery at all. There's so much there, but it's not cluttery. I can go to other sites and, okay, beyond the fucking advertising that you're getting beaten over the head with, that we don't beat you over the head with, it's just, I don't know. There's not a real aesthetic pair of eyes guiding the direction of that website.
And you mean that like generally, like there's nothing, nothing here looks cluttered to you?
No. Like awesome. There's just, okay. I mean, you could always argue that, oh, that's too much, but well, the platform has a lot of content and it has to be exposed somehow and it has, yeah. There has to be some kind of compromise. So, I think as is, it's is almost as good as it can be. I'm willing to be surprised still, and I'm sure I will be, but pretty amazing.
Yeah, awesome. I'm really glad to hear that because it, like you said, it's a lot of information. I'm trying to make it as clean as possible.
I'd tell you if it was shitty. I'm not looking to just like, you know, promote the shit out of this blindly. I want it to look good, feel good, be good. I want the best out of it, so I wouldn't be blowing smoke up your ass about something like this. It's like, it's not good. Fix it. It's nothing personal. Just fix it. So it's nice.
Cool. Well, I really appreciate that.
But you brought up Crowley earlier, and then I had been reading, I read through Sync Book 1 again, because really it had been so long since I read it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so much has changed since when I read it. Because it really was, upon reading it the first time, I'm like, oh yeah, I've played with some of these ideas, especially thinking about, you know, quote unquote, reading nature, whatever that means. But it's very vague, and I heard McKenna talk about it. And so that was my gateway, but I didn't know who any of these fucking people were. And I had never been exposed to any of their work, so I, you know, as years have gone by, I've like forgotten, oh yeah, they were that's what they were writing about, and that's, I don't know. It's being re-exposed to the authors again and the people in the community. It's like, wow, there's so much elegance in the thinking and the writing and seeing all the contrast, but also it's just like certain people are in it in a certain level and then they present it in a certain way. And it's just all this texture to the book. That's really awesome. But a few stood out to me, like you notice, say, I'd say there's some parallels between like Jason Barrera and Steve Wilner. They're almost speaking another language sometimes, which is like actually not that you can't understand it, but it's like very, it feels hyper sometimes and just super heavy synthesis. Like I think of myself as a synthesizer, but like they're very well versed in everything and bring it on heavy, heavy, heavy. And Wilner's essay even like takes on this manic acceleration by the end when he's like going through playing with the language and a bullet point basis.
Yeah, it's fucking like Joycean at some point where it's like you're just kind of, you're firing on all cylinders, but you're only able to, like you said, it's, you can't read it. It's almost, it is like another language, but you are able to just kind of, it makes your brain go.
Right. I lose myself in it and I attach my own meanings to what he's saying too, which is what a synchromysticism is in so many ways, but seeing the same thing, seeing different things. And at certain points, kind of like the same way I will go through a science book and try to incorporate the equations, but I also understand that it's, the meaning is lost in certain ways on me. But at the same time, the integration is still just by reading it and trying is like fruitful. And again, I can draw all these appreciations out of it. And also, I mean, this time through, it makes so much more sense. You know, it's like people really should revisit their old books, revisit their old material for so many reasons, but also because, again, like you read things at certain points when you're not as, I don't want to say as developed or whatever, but I mean, life is a learning process. So a couple years down the road, hopefully most people try to approach life as a learning process. So, you know, some stuff you didn't and you've developed in certain ways. You go back, you read it. It's a remembering process. It's like all life is remembering or all new knowledge is remembering. So sometimes you should revisit what you've already been to because it's also a way that's like synchromysticism is also about like a weird kind of remembrance too. So revisiting and not only your past like pop media, but your life too. I mean, that's also something that's not, well, I mean, it can't be focused on in a Facebook group or something, but I mean, that's like the big, that's the end game for me. It's like, how can I use this in my life? And reading that book again helped refocus it. So I would encourage everyone to kind of like revisit any book that they're like, oh yeah, that was really cool. Or Sync book in particular.
This is, and like you say, this is, it's true for the people writing it as well, right? Like, I know Jason Barrera said he's embarrassed by his Sync Book One chapter this far out from it, which I don't know why. I think it's great.
Yeah.
But, you know, he just feels like, well, he's learned a lot more and blah, blah, blah. I was like, that's what it is, right? Like,
well, there's like a scary amount of, but there's a scary amount of material in there already. Like, he's saying, oh, it's not good enough or something, but it's like, dude, how many people are actually on your level to be able to judge what you're doing? It's not, I mean, I couldn't even say, we're all artists, so we're all kind of judging ourselves subjectively and kind of like not in the way that other people judge us. That is just the nature of the ego and the nature of like the damaged person. We always attack ourselves. And I don't know, we have to understand kind of like, it's not like he's on a higher hierarchy or hierarchical level. It's just like levels upon levels, orders and orders. We're all different and we all integrate material in different ways. So to say, oh yeah, I've learned more. And yeah, I mean, like I look back on my stuff, I'm like, you know, it's a little crude or something, but here I am. I consider myself relatively well-read and relatively intelligent. It's like, okay, this person is somewhere else, which is very impressive, but it impresses me. It's like somewhere else that I'm not, but it's impressing me. So it can't be bad. It just can't be. Even if there's finer points that could be fixed with it. That's like how I view most of what I produce. I don't worry too much about the flaws. That's part of it. But also I can't help but say, I mean, I'll admit, like I'll go back to my essays and kind of like tweak them a little bit. Just because I do, I consider everything an evolving piece of artwork too. So why not? Why not be able to go back and kind of reintegrate my past, present, and future and come up with something new? If any of that makes sense. Are you okay?
I fell asleep on you again.
And sometimes, and I don't want to rant, you know, because like sometimes I feel like I'm ranting and the eyes are glazing, so I don't want to go too far. So you can cut in at any point.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, as I'm saying, I spoke earlier about like this idea of going, always record, I put out a new episode and then I scroll down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of a weird meditation on the same thing, right? Where it's like, every time I do something new, I have to look backward to kind of get a sense of how far I've come. And I don't mean that in a just like patting ourselves on the back, even though I already wrote down, I think that's what this episode's called. like, you know, we're kind of awesome for the, but, like my thing is, all right. Every time I do something, I feel like it sucks.
Yeah.
All right. It's just, I don't know if that's, I'm trying to break out of that sort of mindset, but at any given point in my life, I feel like, man, I'm not good enough. I'm, you know, whatever. But there's something very helpful about having it documented in one space, like on this website or whatever, like in these books or whatever, some way that I can essentially time travel and go, you know, hey, wait, I thought I sucked then. But 2 years out, I can realize, oh, actually, I was pretty good for that, what it is. And I've improved this much in those 2 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, looking at to see this is a different piece of Photoshop stuff I've done every week or so for 3 years. I can see the progression of, you know, Photoshop skills. I can see the progression of different ideas. I can see where I had slumps, you know, like, ooh, okay, you know, these few in a row kind of suck. Like I was rushing, you know, it was a rush job then, or this is where I was overwhelmed. This is where I made some shitty decisions, whatever. like to be able to look back on something, and the more you kind of compile, I think that's just really helpful for me as a, I still feel like it sucks, but it's kind of, there's a kind of mantra that I tell myself of like, yeah, you're still not there. Like, I don't ever think I want to feel like, you know what? I'm done developing. I'm awesome. Everyone suck my dick. Like,
yeah.
I want instead to be like, but I also don't want to be stuck in the doldrums of like, everything sucks. Why bother? Like, cause I see people go through those phases.
Yeah.
But instead to be like, okay, I'm nowhere near the level of skill or perfection or knowledge or, personal development or maturity or emotional control or financial stability or right? All the things that I want to continue to develop. But I can see a progression, and that it's like, well, I talked to Doug about like the sync book stuff, and I'm like, you know, listen, we've only been doing this for like 4 years, and that's a really long time in one respect, and it's also a short amount of time in another. If you realize, wait, in those 4 years, we've got, you know, 6 different books that have been published and all these, you know, 600 hours of podcasts and like all the things that we have managed to accomplish, like take that, you know, it's really important for me to kind of sit back sometimes and be like, okay, I've done that. Like that's an accomplishment. And, I don't know. So it's, that's just really, really important for me to do. And then there's, like you said, this idea of, kind of time traveling, looking back, seeing where you are. It reminds me of, I don't know, the last time you saw the movie, if you've ever seen it, 12 Monkeys.
Of course.
Okay, great. Well, I love that fucking movie. And, there is, to me, there is a really specific thing that applies to synchromysticism in that movie. And I want to say, I don't remember, it was one of the sinkhole guys sort of really drew my attention to this line in a, as a synchromystic significance. It's either Will Morgan or Touré. Regardless, there's this idea that in the movie, he's in the movie theater and he's saying, wait, I don't remember this movie happening like this. And of course, he's a time traveler, so he's questioning if it's like an alternate reality or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he says, like, basically, oh, I get it. It's not the movie that's changed. It's me that's changed. The movie stays the same, but every time you come back to it, you're a different person. You have a different set of personal awareness of your perspective has changed, you know, like, if you were really interested in, quantum physics a year ago and you watched a movie, you might be like, you might watch Interstellar and be like, oh, that's inaccurate or, you know, whatever. And then you might end up being more interested in the emotional connotations of these things. Then you're watching it a year later and you're like, oh, I like the romantic angle of it. Or you just, you know, had a bad breakup and you're like, fuck these people. And the real relationships are like that, you know, whatever it is. So it's like you are constantly changing. And therefore the media is constantly changing because the media is always being filtered through your perception.
Right. And another chapter at Stay With Me was Kevin Halcott's chapter. And he talks about the synchromystic aura. And I've had this idea in the back of my mind, not in the exact language, though, and that's why I loved the chapter so much, because it was couched in so much well-orchestrated symbolism and references to, in plain speak, too, not totally non-linear and hard to follow, very, like, straightforward. It's just like, hey, your aura, like, literally self-organizes your perceptual environment, not the physical environment. That's really what we're talking about, is, like, perceptual environment. That's a whole different level of reality. So I'd never say that, yeah, we can manufacture reality, but I'll definitely say this much. We are living vortexes that like entrain our conscious perception and the consciousness of others around us. We just do. And in so many ways, when people are triggers for you, think about you in relation to them and maybe I don't know. Maybe they're not getting this. Obviously, they can't be getting the same experience, but you're triggers for other people as well. So, like, your story and, like, the part you're playing, and it's like, yeah, these people are kind of telling me a story, and it's like, whoa, I was just thinking that, and they said it. It's like, am I controlling this? But it's like, how many times has someone thought that about you? I wonder that. And that's, like, that's what's so trippy about the whole thing, I guess, is this.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
Sorry, can I ask you a question? So, like, you know, you make the point sometimes that you're not a scientist, but you do have a scientific mind. Would you say that's an accurate description of you?
Yeah, to a degree. I don't think I could ever... Yeah, to a degree, sure.
Like, okay, so I think about... Sometimes I think about synchromysticism in a scientific sense, meaning, and it goes directly to that 12 monkeys idea, right? Of, like, it's the, what is the variable? Like, if we were talking about coincidences, right? Like, hey, I was thinking of a friend, and I hadn't seen the friend in a long time. Blah, blah, blah. The friend calls me. Okay, that's a synchronicity, right? But we could then look at things like, is there some sort of telepathy involved or precognition or, right? Like, all these things could be, quote unquote, explanations for the synchronicity, mm-hmm. right? Like, we just don't even realize, oh, by thinking of my friend, I sent him some subtle telepathic message that made him reach out to me. Or I knew my friend was going to call, had a sort of precognitive vision, and that's what made me think of the friend. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's how can you know? You can't.
Right, how can you know? So you can't. So there are days where I think, because I'm not a pop culture guy. I do enjoy movies and cinema. I fucking hate television. But I'm just really not a pop culture guy. I'm not a media guy. Synchromysticism has forced me to watch way more shitty movies than I ever watched before. but there are days that I'm like, no, this is perfect because the media is, for all intents and purposes, it removes the variable. Right. Of the media does not change. You can return to that movie 5 years later and the movie is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Now a guy like Jay Katza would say that's not necessarily true. You know, that he argues that an event in the future could actually affect the movie making in the past. And again, you could say that's precognitive. You know, why does if there was a movie that came out in 1990 that showed the World Trade Center being blown up, we could say, again, there was a precognitive act of someone having a vision of 9/11 and therefore they put it in the movie or whatever. Right. But if we take the personal synchronicity or personal perception of it, then the precognitive aspect is kind of removed, unless we want to say, hey, we're all so connected that the artist who made the movie in 1990 put that one line in because in some subconscious way, he knew that it was going to affect me 10 years later while I'm watching this movie on a friend's couch, you know, whatever. You could argue that, you know, whatever. But when we're trying to simplify this, I guess I'm saying there are days where I think it's perfect. The movies are perfect because they remove that variable. And yet they sort of, when you say you lose something and gain something, is to me, it also, intensifies the variable of the personal psychology, the personal, the set and setting, if we want to take like the Leary approach, right?
Yeah.
So the set, you know, is what you, you are bringing to it. So this would be the thing that's changed. When you come to the movie 5 years later, you're going to have a completely different set, right? Your life experiences. Oh, now I'm married. You know, me watching Eyes Wide Shut. I watched Eyes Wide Shut in the movie theater on a first date with a girl. You know, like, so the idea of like this, like, disjointed marriage was a weird date experience.
Yeah.
Then to watch that movie years later with my wife was a totally different fucking experience, right? So, like, things like that. Your set has changed.
Right.
And this is an aspect, a sort of very technical aspect of synchromysticism that I have to admit I think about quite often, but there's never anyone that I feel, not that I feel no one can have the conversation. I just feel like no one ever usually wants to have that conversation or I don't know. So I just kind of want to bring it up with you here today because I feel like I am just curious your thoughts on if you were to perform, if you were trying to create a sort of environment for the ideal synchronicity controlled experiment, there are days where I think the movies are almost ideal in that respect. And of course, right. Not ideal because they open this whole other can of worms.
Right, right. Yeah, I think you brought this up maybe once in the past and we touched on it, but I'm glad you're bringing it up again because it is worth exploring. Yeah, it's a finer technical point, but I don't know how many episodes you're into this now. I think people that are in this deep want some more kind of nuanced or maybe even just kind of like nerdy indulgences and analyzing of the phenomenon. So that's all good. And to say that, like, okay, we had this repeatable experiment with the movies. That's what McKenna said about the psychedelic experience too. He's like, hey, we have a repeatable experiment with DMT. You do DMT in South America. Another person halfway across the world does DMT in Australia, and you get generally the same archetypal experience. So machine elves, all that stuff. Not always. There obviously, again, perception comes into it, but then there is always this kind of quasi-objective thing that we view as objective, but probably has its own subjectivity and is therefore, I don't know where to draw the line anymore. So movies themselves, right. It's kind of a devil's bargain for me because it's like I'm giving up quite a bit of time to find synchronicity in movies when really what is synchronicity meant for? It's meant to use in your life for you, for like your life decisions for, not always, because like sometimes you need just like cool logic and just kind of like machine-like programming to go through certain decisions and life in its entirety. But you also need this kind of like non-linear, crazy ass synchronistic part for, I think, big stuff. The Goro Adachi in his essay too, that one, I love that you brought up time traveling because I wanted to talk to you about that beforehand. So this is all part of that entrainment process, right? It's like, I'm not manufacturing this conversation, but I wanted to go in the time travel direction anyway. And it just so happened that you did. And maybe I said something or something small that, you know, triggered that, or you had already been thinking something. So it's interesting to think how the feedback works and what is generating what. But with movies, yeah, I'm giving up a lot of my time and I rather nowadays, I guess when I'm watching movies, I kind of see it as I know that it's going to drop something on me, like almost always now. So I know I could go there and I could probably do that a lot. But I don't know. It's like every waking moment seems like it's speaking in some way. Not every, I mean, that would be too intense, but it's like enough of it is where it's like, I don't know. I don't need the movie either. And there's something to be said from just like, yeah, the larger world can be overwhelming too and doesn't always give a clear picture, but it's like, Goro Adachi also talks about, it's the big fish approach. It's like, yeah, you can, and McKenna says this too. McKenna, God, what a conduit he was for like pure consciousness, in my opinion. And he wasn't a perfect guy. He was fucked up in a lot of ways, but also just, again, some of the, my God, I don't even care his origins, whatever. And I'm on record as saying, I do think he did all the drugs and more that he says he did. But to get back to the point, it's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't, want to give too much of my time over to the movies, especially newer movies. So again, I'm okay revisiting older stuff and stuff that has a pedigree, I guess. I just art, not all art's created equal. I'm sorry. It's not, yeah, treasure in the trash, all that, but it's like, you don't need to dig in the trash. There's all this beautiful stuff that you can engage with instead. And your life is also beautiful. So engage with that too. And not just like, I don't know, we can overanalyze shit to death instead of just living. And synchronicity just like adds, I don't know. Do you get what I'm saying? Maybe I'm like overanalyzing it, but.
Oh, no. I'd be the first one to agree with you on that.
So I don't know if it's the perfect repeatable experiment because it is very, there's an feedback engaging process. And no, I'm not changing the events of that movie. And I get where Jake might be going with that because there is, again, you can do all kinds of playful things with time travel. Like I often think now of, before I really, the sync started coming pretty heavy, I'm like, I don't really get time travel. I've come to my own decision that it's not really realistic or going to happen. And okay, David's on. Maybe we can get him on the call all of a sudden. But anyway, or not. But I it suddenly dawned on me, okay, why time travel is like interesting. I mean, really attractive as an idea, because it's like something happens and it's almost like, yeah, something, it's a feeling that something got fiddled with in the timeline. It's like, how could it be any other way? Like, how could I have not noticed this? Because it's one of two things. It's either like a great unveiling of something that was totally clouding your vision, or it was a fiddling with the timeline, or some, I guess it's some combination of both that I can't even comprehend. But it's very strange. So it's like something happens and it seems to be a trigger. And then all of a sudden everything shifts into a different space. That's the heart of the psychedelic experience, whether it's waking or it's induced or whatever. That's a huge part of it. So I don't know how to answer the question, I guess, in a clean and clear way. But maybe David can.
I think I have like 20 minutes.
That's perfect. We have about the same-ish.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. What was the question?
What was it even a question?
Time travel.
Yeah.
Time travel.
Time travel.
Oh, so last night I was watching a Twilight Zone episode after reading Suicide Kings for like well over an hour. I found a PDF of that, the old one. And this whole Lincoln Kennedy thing forever. And then I put on a random Twilight Zone, right? One I'd never seen before. And it's talking like basically as these guys sitting at a table and they're discussing the nature of time travel. And if you could travel back in time, could you actually change anything, or is history just written? And despite the fact you're going back, what's done is done or whatever. And so the guy like walks out the door and then all of a sudden it's like the day that Lincoln is going to be killed and he's doing everything he can to stop Lincoln from getting assassinated by John Wilkes Booth. And he goes to Ford's Theater and they, they arrest him because he's being crazy or whatever. You guys still there?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And, they arrest him and he goes to this whole thing. And basically what ends up happening is like the police chief who believes him goes on, like he becomes legendary for having been the person who knows that the president is going to die, but people don't know how he knew, but it's because this guy was there and he told him. And so Lincoln didn't get stopped from getting killed, but the guy, you know, basically became recognized. And so the person in the club that he was in, where everyone was talking about this, who was like the butler or whatever, he got made into one of his pals who was all uppity up because of this incident. It was just really, it was super synchronistic, you know, cause I was reading Suicide Kings all about Lincoln. And then I go and turn on a random Twilight Zone. It's all about Lincoln, which is kind of interesting. Also the fact that it was like, this came out, you know, relatively shortly before, Kennedy was killed. And so this nature of if you could go back and stop something, but meanwhile, the people who are doing the episode don't realize that a very similar thing is about to go down in the not too distant future. Yet, you know, so in a sense, it's like, it's prophetic on multiple levels. I thought it was really interesting.
I actually have a series of, I'm just going to throw this in. I have a series of notes of, I don't know, I never knew how to work it in, but of like five different episodes of the Twilight Zone that are like really heavy. I love Twilight Zone. I love that fucking show growing up. Like, my birthday is New Year's Eve, and they used to always do the New Year's Eve Twilight Zone marathons.
That, me and my mom, too, yeah.
Yeah, and I would just sit there, and that was my birthday every year. I would just sit there and watch hours of Twilight Zone. Anyway, there's, like, some really heavy sinks around Twilight Zone episodes and JFK. I can't think of the Lincoln one you're speaking of. I'll have to check that.
Yeah, it's called, I think it's called Way Back, I believe is the name of the episode. Yeah, I thought it was funny. The Eye of the Beholder episode is episode 42. The one where the girl's in the bandages and they take the bandages off and she's the one who looks normal, but everyone else looks all crazy. So it's the Eye of the Beholder, you know? I thought that was kind of funny, but yeah, I've just been watching episode after episode, but like, it's interesting the randomness. Cause when I first approached it, I was like, am I going to do these in order or am I just going to do it totally sporadically? And I felt like sporadically was really the way to go. But yeah, no, your book is really interesting, Alan, cause it just like, and I think it's just the nature of the way that you wrote it, that it is still an outline somewhat. But I love how it starts out super concise, like I'm reading a novel, and then it starts to get more and more tangential. Did I say that right? As you go along to the point where it almost feels like I'm reading, like if I didn't know you, it would feel like the ramblings of a crazy person. But, you know, it's like, what the fuck? It keeps going, you know? It starts to become more, and I think it's just because more needs to be filled in the later part of the book. But when you explore the later part, it's just like it turns into like notes, basically, at certain points, not all over the place.
Yeah, it's the I was trying to write it kind of fractally, of like, as you said, like, you want to give someone an entry point and then to show, like, all right, now that you understand that, let's kind of go a little deeper. Let's go a little deeper. Let's go a little deeper. And at some point, it became. That's why I've had the hardest time finishing it, because I was able to get into the mindset of in the process of doing that. And then like when I had to stop writing it to finish Sync Book 2, mm-hmm. like then when I came back to Suicide Kings, I'm like, I don't know how to jump back in to this where I was. Like it was such a specific self-regulatory process to get into that mindset.
Yeah, I could see how that would be. Another thing is, I was looking at The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall, and there's a few things in there. I was like, I couldn't remember if I saw them in your book or not, but like, I just came across the tree, Arthur's tree of the round table. And I thought it was really interesting that if you look at the layout of his representation of the tree, it's like you're looking at the tree of life, but the knights are the spheroes. Have you ever seen that?
I have not seen that, but
super applicable.
Yeah, like the Arthur stuff. Like, this is something I've talked about with Doug. Like, it's clear that they knew. Like, okay, so the Arthurian legends are like working on like multiple levels, right? And we can call these like the Dark Ages for certain obvious reasons, but like. It's almost like, we look like a Mayan culture and like, you know, we like to put them on a pedestal. It was like, these are people who understood synchronicity and worked it into their culture. Like, it would seem like the medieval authors, like, definitely understood how to incorporate synchronicity or these, well, you know, synchronicity like subjects into their stuff. Cause it's working on so many fucking levels. The metaphor, it's almost like, you know, if you're letting ego and id run rampant, you know, so you see the Apollonian aspects and the Dionysian aspects, all the things we've addressed before, but like, it seems like they're working at this level of like really high level of knowledge of esoteric and, you know, like Bill's thing of like bury the dog deeper. Do you know what I'm talking
mm-hmm.
about?
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're doing that all the fucking time. you know, everything from, God, you know, like, so, Arthur is like, clearly he's like a Christ resonator, right? And there's like, you know, things, okay, like he gets, these visited by these 12 different, people, you know, okay, 12 disciples, 12 months of the year, blah, 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 blah. But then when you're like, wait a second, but are they aware of all this? And like, when you realize it kind of works on all these levels, it's less to me, it seems to me less like an example of what we might synchromistically look at a movie and be like, well, they couldn't possibly have known. Like, it seems like, no, that's actually like, that's the framework of it.
That's the more probable explanation.
Yeah.
I feel more and more after reading things from the 14th, 15th, and 16th century, esoteric works that I look at are primarily focused on, that's like the key component of what mysticism is basically looking for correspondences and extrapolating information from those correspondences. Like I said, many times, but I think that there's a strong argument for that. There's definitely a time frame thing where it's like that only became more, I mean, that's like the cornerstone of mysticism, it's synchronicity. So.
Well, and you have to think about the worldview that was coming out of. I mean, people in that era, for all the shit that was wrong with feudalism and the feudal era and so on and so forth, there was a shared story of being part of like a larger thing. And in that case, it was, you know, kind of a patriarchal bitch slap you kind of god. But at the same time, there was also a poetry to it. It was the music of the spheres. It was this perfection that people felt like they were in tune with. And of course there was like this kind of social engineering going on where it's like, yeah, you're part of it and you're meant to be a slave to me forever. So it got corrupted. But at the same time, people were already in that state of mind that they're, I think the philosophy is called organicism or something like that. It's the worldview opposed to, say, mechanism that we're engaged in, and reductionist Newtonianism. So our whole culture is based on the complete opposite of what those people lived in, you know, the water they existed in, their environment. So of course the deepest shit is going to come out of environments. Like, what soil does the plant grow out of? And so these people seem like they had more knowledge because they fucking did, because for all the problems of those times and places, the people that had time to write books, that had time to engage in scholarship, it was all about just fucking mostly solitude, and exploration of, it had to be exploration of like inner and outer realms. I mean, it's nothing, it's psychonautics, clearly. It's just like, I don't necessarily know how all of them were doing it. Everyone knows that there's different ways to engage in the process. And we know that there's archetypes lurking down there. So they're all bringing back the same shit. It's just a matter of like, wow, a lot of people were doing it and it was their life's purpose. You know, no one had any, people had ladders to climb, but a lot of times people picked a path and they stuck on it. They're like, hey, this is my life's purpose. I'm part of this larger thing. This is what I'm doing. And that shit got produced. I mean, that's what was getting published then. And nowadays it's, I don't know, how to cut all your credit card debt. So of course
I'll throw this in here as just a fun sync, is I actually just finished reading the Mark Twain book A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, which is basically about someone who time travels back to King Arthur. Just like, and there was a, of course, there's the more recent Stephen King novel which has someone time travel back to JFK, and the Twilight Zone of some time traveling back to Lincoln. Like, so like there's the obvious explanation of these being sort of time, like, nodal points in time that as artists we want to explore. And we're saying, well, what if we were able to view them, you know, or I just want to explore that time, and et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's an obvious explanation there, and yet there's something else that happens when we re-examine these time periods. And then for me, it was like the really trippy thing of I'm reading Mark Twain talk about it. So he's from a different time period I am, right? So he's talking about the people in the past from a perspective of the past, if that makes sense.
Right.
So it's like, it's this really weird meta thing where I'm looking at, he's the time traveler's perspective is already foreign from my perspective, from a chronology. It's really mm-hmm. interesting.
Did you have Mark Twain book where he travels to the time of JFK and stops the assassination?
That was a Mark Twain book? That's interesting. That's really impressive.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so I don't have much time, but I wanted to geek out for a second and just I don't feel like I ever mentioned this on Always Record, so I wanted to put it out there. I had kind of a synchronicity breakthrough with the film Prometheus. Did I tell you guys about this?
No.
I don't know. Tell us.
Okay, so basically I was looking at, so there's a Tool album, 10,000 Days. I watched Prometheus with the Tool album 10,000 Days over and over and over again. I've tried 10,000 Days with other things. I've tried Prometheus with other things. But the first time through, I figured this thing out in my own perception, in my own, you know, my own world, where, like, if you start 10,000 Days at when Ridley Scott's name fades out, so the music kicks in on when the frame switches, when the next thing happens during the opening credits, it's like this incredible alignment. But then the second time through, it wasn't doing the magic that I wanted to see that it was doing the first time through. And so I ended up realizing, I was like, well, that album, you know, there's this phenomenon where you have these three songs. So you have Wings for Mary Part 1 and Wings for Mary Part 2. Wings for Mary Part 2 is longer than Wings for Mary Part 1. But if you take the last song in the album, which is kind of this kind of ayahuasca kind of like, tonal kind of thing, not the chant one, that's more like one of the songs, but like it's this very like guttural kind of trippy shit. I forget what it says, but if you take that song and you add it to Wings for Mary Part 1, it equals the same exact length for Wings for Mary Part 2. The two songs together equal the length of the other song to the second, and then they actually beat match together and they do harmonies for each other. And it's you know, it's one of those things where you'd it's far less likely that that's just a coincidence, right? I mean, holy fuck, right? If you listen to it, you'll get the idea. But I decided the second time I ran the album through to put all of those together and then take the other versions of them out so it stands alone in the place for Wings for Mary Part 1. Does that make sense? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. And then I took the final song from Lateralis and put that at the end of the whole thing. So basically I customized my own playlist. And if you do that and you started at Ridley Scott's name disappearing, I did not expect that the very last sound from the last song of Lateralis would actually end the second that the movie ends. Not to mention the fact that it's just extremely meaningful coincidence all the way through. To an unbelievable degree. So I wanted to share that and put that out there. I don't know if anyone out there is crazy enough to take the time to do it, but if you do, believe me, you won't be disappointed.
And I just want to piggyback on that, which is, since this is a prequel to Alien movie, right?
Yeah.
I found this link the other day. I just dropped into the chat and I'll put it on the episode notes. The blog is alienexplorations.blogspot. There's a guy he has two different articles and they're just looking at this guy, Simon Deering, who is one of the like designers of, the movie Alien. And at the end of the movie, when she does the whole self-destruct, she's going to blow the ship up.
Yes.
So. But right, the ship is called Mother, which will be important in a second. But basically, Ridley Scott, there's actually quotes from an interview with the guy on one of the articles. And he says, Ridley Scott said, hey, can you make this control panel look really complicated? But it doesn't really matter what it says because we're just going to be on screen for like a second or two, but just make it look like a really complicated control panel. Well, apparently the guy says that he was reading Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine at the time, and that's why, and there's all these pictures of the different buttons, and they are fucking crazy. Like, there's a Yoni button, there's a Shakti excess button, there's Pranic Lift 777, There's an Ain Sof button. There's a 666 button. There's another button. It's not in this article. It must be in the second one. But, you know, the mushroom fly agaric. There's a button for that.
Area.
Yeah.
Like,
it's crazy. Like, and then, like, there's different, this guy, I don't think pointed out, but I'm able to recognize there are like other like astrological signs. Like this button has like the Scorpio, astrological symbol on it. And
right.
It's just like,
there's a theme throughout the movie of the variations on 237. You see 723 is the very last scene of the entire movie when it focuses on her pod. We've talked about that before and how weird it is then that you have the gray from Tony Scott. He's like one of the executive producers or whatever who killed himself right out. After the premiere by jumping off of a bridge in LA. But then the fact that it's like he's in, you know, you have the gray and you have Alien and the movies are the exact same length to the second. And then the guy who wrote the gray wrote Communion. And so you have, Wolfen too, right? So if I recall correctly, I'd have to ask Darren Brew, he came across the same thing independently. Not the length part, but he noticed that he's like, wait a minute, the writer of The Gray did Communion, so The Grays, you know? And you have 723 obviously associated with Sirius, and so you have this whole Sirius connection with the wolves, and I was tripping out on the fact that it looked like this whole movie, like everyone had died, but they were like in purgatory or whatever, and that like the wolves were actually liberating them, but they saw them as their enemies, but they're like alien intelligences or angels or demons or whatever, however you want to relate to them. And then I found out after the fact that a book from which The Gray is based is called Ghost Walker. And so I'm like, Ghost Walker? What does that sound like? You know, so I was on this whole trip around that. Interestingly, Tony Scott died on St. Anthony's Day. It was the day for St. Anthony because it was the day that the witches of the Salem witch trial were put to death. It was their death day. But it's weird because everyone in the town was on ergot. And so that's the idea. It's because he's the patron saint of ergot poisoning. And so it's like Tony Scott, Anthony, like Tony, like right around. Like I had this whole weird thing around that. But yeah, the symbolism of Prometheus and 10,000 days are absolutely compatible, to a ridiculous degree. And that was what made me want to put them together was because of the symbolism that they're both communicating. It was just kind of fucking blew me away. So, yeah.
Well, that's just it. And like when you're able to get a confirmation like that, for me, these buttons, like we saw what seemed like, you know, again, when I watched the movie Alien as a younger man, I'd probably seen the movie a few handful of times and it was just a sort of kind of horror movie. And it wasn't until seeing it, I don't know, 2 years ago that I was like, holy shit, this movie is like loaded with very obvious symbolism. The fact that the ship is called Mother, you know, she saves her cat, her pussy at the end, you know, mm-hmm. She aborts the mission. The thing looks like a giant dick that she's fighting. The thing bursts out of someone's stomach. Like this whole thing that's kind of a play on motherhood and reproduction and like, you know, sort of feminist, sort of taking control of her reproductive organs. Like this whole thing plays out. But then to see like a button marked like Shakti on a, on a spaceship called Mother, like adds another level of confirmation, but also, I don't know.
Shakti with that deviant behavior.
Yeah. It's like really fucking wild, but I actually this is another thing. Like I haven't read it. Probably, oh God, it's been too many years since I last read Brave New World.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more recent that I read Brave New World Revisited, his sort of follow-up nonfiction essays on the book. But if you look in Brave New World, there's, you know, the orgy porgy scene?
Mm-hmm.
Well, like to me, there's another ritualistic aspect that plays out in that scene that doesn't really kind of make sense in the culture that he's describing, or at least it didn't when I read it a few years ago, was like, there's nothing of any kind of religious or whatever aspect, right? What is there, like the Model T and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like the Ford is the God, right? Instead of Christ, it's a T, and it's instead of the cross, it's a T, and it's in our God Ford, right? But the room they go into is like room 322 or something like that, which like would of course be like Skull and Bones and whatever. But it's also, or maybe it was 321, and it's like, to me, this is indicative of the equinox, right? And what happens is like there's 12 tables or 12 beds that they have the orgy on, and there's like all these sort of things that to me related to this idea of almost like a astrological alignment, that they're playing out this thing where these people start in 12 different seats around a center in this room marked for the equinox, and then they start to mate with each other. And you have, again, like this, John mentioned music of the spheres. It's almost like that. But, you know, these are things that would add a whole other layer of meaning or or whatever to their society.
I'm going crazy over here reading your book, because I'm like, have you seen Eye of the Devil with Abbey Road yet?
No, I have not.
Because if you look at the thing, like, so I don't remember if you mentioned in there, if I read the last time I looked through it, if I came across, you know, the Beatles' first album, American album, the first time a Beatles album came out in America was the day JFK was killed. You probably knew that.
Yeah.
Okay. So 5 years after that, you have the White Album, To the Day. So the fifth year anniversary of JFK's death, they come out with the White Album. But if you look at the symbolism with Eye of the Devil, and it's completely open for debate. I have my own feelings on it. I think it's totally, like, you know, off the charts. But just what happens if you start Abbey Road at Sharon Tate's title on Eye of the Devil, which was her debut film? That film is like it is a Golden Bough movie. It's about the ritualistic killing of the king, that he's the sun god, and you have the 12 people that surround him and this whole deal, and they're just really like, I mean, that's what the movie is about. And I'm surprised, like, even watching it, that they even made a movie that was this anthropological in this sense in the first place. And it's like a Turner classic movie, you know, and it's like introduce Sharon Tate, like, in this film. Like, it just so happens that her first film is about the ritualistic killing of the king, and it's like probably one of the most direct films I've seen in terms of that archetype, second to, you know, The Wicker Man, obviously. It's fucking weird. And so, yeah, there's this whole Beatles connection into it, and I was relating the Beatle with the Scarab, with the moon card, and Watergate, and all of this kind of stuff, and like that the Beatle is a symbol of eternal life and rebirth, and how you have this notion when you're looking at, you know, Lincoln, Kennedy, and you're going back and forth with all of these crazy, you're like, dude, is this just like an example of like either time not being linear, or that we're playing out the same thing again and again, but maybe these are even just like, there's an aspect of the soul that's like transmigratory or whatever, and that's what the Beatle represents, and just all this kind of stuff. Yeah, it's a huge rabbit hole to get into, which your book is proof of. But look at, you know, Patrick's blog, and you'll see that there's some really weird shit going on.
Hey, I assume you're about to lose internet access, or like your unlimited internet time.
Oh no, I'm not on internet. I have to go to work in a second. I'm gonna go study with Baruch, but yeah.
Oh, give him my best, of course. Listen, what I want you to sort of think about is, you probably haven't seen it yet. I just released a new episode of Sync Quick News.
Nice.
And so that was just like two, 3 hours ago, it went online. There's a thing which I'm sure you'll fucking appreciate, is that there's this guy in California, some actor started a new religion based on the concept of synchronicity. And what does he call his cult? Full Circle.
Oh my God.
Right.
There you go.
So, yeah, like,
I don't even remember if I went into on this show the whole thing with the Doors album Full Circle. After Morrison died, they came out with it on the day that the biggest ship that ever got sunk in around Vietnam got sunk, the day that the Doors released Full Circle, which is ironic because Jim Morrison's dad was in charge of the other ship in the Gulf of Tonkin. You have the Gulf of Tonkin incident or whatever. He was the guy in charge of all of that. And so it's just, the whole thing is just, this is there. This is at the, that gulf. So it's just, it's really weird. Yeah. Mind fuck city. Yeah. And I just wanted to mention really quick that because I mentioned the Ridley Scott thing, you know, I ended my Sync book chapter reluctant to myself. I ended it a particular way. The last line of it is about, you know, the child at the end of 2001 Space Odyssey being symbolic of Horus. And I was like, it was one of the places in my chapter where I was just like outright. I was like, I think that this is what this is. You know, I was talking about the Aeon of Horus, the younger and all of this. You know, isn't it interesting that Ridley Scott announced just recently on this, at the same time that he's both doing 3001, a continuation of 2001 miniseries, while simultaneously he announced that he's doing a miniseries on Jack Parsons.
Exactly. Yeah.
What the fuck, right? It's like, dude, it's like a nodal point in my whole Sync web that I was tripping on. To the degree that I decided to end my Sync book chapter with that recognition of the connection between Jack Parsons' philosophy and 2001 A Space Odyssey. And then Ridley Scott, the guy who I just blew my mind with this whole Prometheus Tool thing. I just, like, the timing is just, it's synchronistically on a personal level is super impeccable.
And what is the band that was made after Tool kind of disbanded-ish? What did the Perfect Circle.
There you go. Yeah. And so if you watch Prometheus, you'll notice the Rosemary symbolism. She's Mary because she has the virgin birth, right? Even though it's fucked up. It's like Rosemary because she gives birth to an alien instead of the devil. The guy who impregnates her with the alien sperm, you know, he walks through the screen in the same way that the mechanical David, which is reminiscent of David from Kubrick's Spielberg's artificial intelligence, you know, he walks through, the guy walks through a screen holding a rose. He puts the rose through first and he walks through an image of the aliens on a screen. And if you look at that symbolically, you see that when the aliens are running,
what is this? What movie is this?
And that you have you seen Prometheus?
No.
Okay. Well, this happens, dude. It's crazy. There's like direct Rosemary's Baby symbolism.
He brings a rose through a screen.
Yes.
With the, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. And then the mechanical David.
So he's Dave Bowman stepping out of the monolith screen, bringing Rosemary with him.
Yeah. If you're synchronistically not so subtle. Yeah. It's out of this world. It's like, holy fuck, they did that. Like, that just happened. Like, the first time I watched it, I was like, Jesus. And so if you watch it with Tool, you have Wings for Mary, part one and two. The whole thing is centered around Whalen Corp, which has the wings, you know, like you're earning your wings, like Prince Charles got his wings or whatever, you know, so you're like, oh, you got your wings. So it's like a play on both the military and the spiritual at the same time.
Hey, you know what else gives you wings?
Red Bull.
Red Bull. And what else does Mia Farrow in The Last Unicorn fights the Red Bull?
Yep. I know. As
Rosemary, yeah.
I already went there, Alan, but yes. Yep. Yeah, it's funny. And I was just reading about unicorns right before this call in The Secret Teaching. So that was funny. Yep. There you go.
Well, my name, Doc here, I'm versatile, and plus I never eat the cow if it ain't halal. While you rap with bitten styles in the third degree, myself is having tight like cornbread, Earl and me. Showcase with the voice, it's so fresh, and I can still serve a rubber in a minute or less. I can talk all day, but I'ma save my breath, and let my nigga Mark 7 just do the rest.
I do the rest, but I won't rest, get fresh off of any beat you suggest. High tech, with the combination we prepare, rap, concierge behind a kick in the stand. Check it, marks the word, 7 marks the spot. Guaranteed to keep it hot, if you like it or not. MCs is ink blots, we verbal hot shots. Taking the top spot, we clutch and top notch.
And together we will forever be high fidelity, definitely. Switching the melody, can it be the Casanova speech therapy that heavily puts the flavor right where it should be? My words have been connected to the poets of old. The way I utilize the pen and turn ink to gold. Keep it overly creative, innovator or soul. Now check the flavor from the fader, which my DJ holds.
Drop the beat with your 5 chords, create tracks. New mark
in your sector.
That's top of the pile.
Hotter than brimstone.
What's this, y'all? But don't start riffing.
Partner, turn that sound up.
that got together for the better, whether him or me. And together we will forever be high fidelity, definitely switching the melody. Can it be the brothers that you rarely see that got together for the better, whether him or me?
Underground somewhere outside the city.
You better remember these incredible MCs. Our sounds invade, spread plagues just like a leprosy. Our weapons be our vocals, guaranteed to smoke you. Better think twice about stepping with nice. Never focused on ice and still coming off tight. It's like the color of night, I mean the beat is so right. Damn, soup and serve infiltrate your heart. The beat that's compliment of DJ Newmar.
And it's the fifth element, never repetitive. Highly competitive, classy and elegant. Super intelligent when telling it to ladies and gents. Never irrelevant. Now do I have to say it again?
The fifth element, never be hesitant. Totally accurate, present or past tense. We immaculate, in fact you get a whole crew back in this. Situate my two-inch tape, will show you what we working
and
with.
And together we will forever be high fidelity, definitely switching the melody. Can it be the way that we demonstrate all wonder twin powers we activate?
I'll tear a competitor, pluck them like chicken feathers. I'm better than ever, incredible, poetic, co-editor, debtor, be better. I bet you regardless the weather, whatever, we're clever endeavors with me and seven repping together.
Your style is post-mortem, no decorum. Stop pouring, we exploring, you ignoring. I'm the foreman, longshoreman, and I'm sure when you touring that you whack and you boring.
This is yours. Lay it on.